So, welcome everybody. Glad to have you back. It was a long time, but here we are. Today, I would like to present on a subject that I find very interesting, and that has to do initially with urban gulls. So, these are seabirds that are living in a city or on land. And I will elaborate a little bit more why that has some implications, and specifically in the modern world we're living in the Anthropocene, there are some science implications, but also real world issues of how we manage our landscapes, our world, and diseases and humans within. It's part of the Anthropocene. So let me start first with the paper that we just published. It's called Model-Based Prediction of a Vacant Summer Niche in a Subarctic Urban Scape: A Multi-Year Open Access Data Analysis of a Niche Swap by Short-billed Gulls. That's work that we have done with students and other research associates here who helped us. There are five authors involved and some other people who also helped, and we're very grateful to them. So let me first give you a quick overview about the science, and then I show you why it matters wider, because again, it affects the management of the places where most people really live and which currently really isn't managed well or has actually no management whatsoever, while diseases are rampant in these areas, and so are some birds. So the idea is that we are in an area in the Arctic, in the subarctic. That's a city here called Fairbanks in Alaska. It's supposed to be more or less representative for many cities and many smaller cities in the subarctic areas and other places too for the urban space. It's based on some surveys that are informed by an earlier study on ravens. I will not make reference much here to the ravens that we studied, but there has been a raven study in winter and whole year, and then we found from there that the ravens are widely gone in the city of Fairbanks in summer, and another species comes in that happens to be the mew or the common gull, nowadays called the short-billed gull, and it's a migratory bird that comes from a little bit further south and moves into the city specifically, let's say from April till early August, perhaps mid-August. And we studied these gulls in summer, and we first started out with 80 plots where we did uninformed surveys, like representative sampling. That was our idea in the city of Fairbanks. And then we continued 2 years of study with 50 data points, more specifically. So we used that for training data. This is a 2 year training data to train the models. And then we assessed the model. And we also created a fourth year of long-term abundance data for some of the what we perceive as hotspots or relevant sites. So it's very unique research design because it starts out uninformed, then use training data, and then use an abundance time series basically, and then at the end does an assessment with the initially data that were done initially in an uninformed way. So you have a basic an unbiased assessment. So that's a very interesting research design there. It's basically some sort of citizen science, random sampling in an urban scape, and that's pretty straightforward. But anyway, the research design is unique. Then we applied some algorithms to capture the data and to explain and model them. That's where the modeling comes in, and that was done with several algorithms from the machine learning AI perspective, and they were combined together. That's where the ensemble model comes in. And so you draw some conclusions from the ensemble model, but then in addition, we also used a data set, habitat layers for the urban scape of Fairbanks, interior Alaska, subarctic, that were available open access, and that was great. They were provided by the municipality in our library and some other data sources, including the U.S. Census data. The census data are data, socioeconomic data, that provide details who lives in some areas and so on. And the idea would be that perhaps the human setup would determine where the gulls live and determines the ecological niche of the gulls plus other factors. So anyway, we tested that out. The result was that we find gulls to be in Fairbanks, of course, in April till August, more or less. That was clear. We found out that they really like to be in urban areas near rivers. where they're probably hanging out or might even be nesting. We haven't studied nesting there at all, but we look at abundance and clusters. We find that humans play a role, human activities, and also human waste, including supermarkets and fast food restaurants and places that have an impervious surface. So something like parking lots are very important for these birds. So if there's a parking lot, an industrial style parking lot, with some water nearby, like a gravel pond, or even a river, that usually creates good habitat for these gulls to be in. So that's clear. So in other words, the human factor is more important than the boreal forest itself. And the numbers are sometimes pretty high. I mean, high means there are some sightings over 200 birds or something, and depends. But anyway, there is a distribution question involved in the city, and the birds specifically are at certain hotspots in the city, as I had described, anything near rivers and water, and there are certain soil types that can characterize those things pretty well in an industrial landscape, usually industrial zones, including some supermarkets and strip malls and so on. Surprisingly, the human factor, the US census data, which happened to be pretty coarse, are not so powerful, despite them having many predictors, but they would not overrule the gull distribution factors. Mostly it's the industrial ones that I mentioned, not so much the socioeconomics and where people live and how old they are and so on. Anyway, so that's just the result in a nutshell, perhaps. You can read up more on that study. But what I really want to talk about is this idea of birds, some birds, a few species, moving into the city. I mean, you're familiar with pigeons, you're familiar with house sparrows, with starlings, perhaps even. These are all animals that like to be near humans or with some sort of affiliation or with a human coexistence or co-evolution, if you want. There's a few more species, but there's not too many. Magpies are among them, the ravens are usually among them, and also the gulls. That has been a phenomenon, has been shown for a long time. Gulls, traditionally known perhaps as seagulls, but not all gulls are at sea, but they are in coastal areas usually, but they have been following farming for a long time, certainly industrial farming. It's very much known in the Western world. And so you get these big colonies, wide distribution now even affecting all their migratory aspects in life history. So urban gulls is a thing. I mean, you can Google it and find more reference on that. There are a lot of urban gull studies. Some gulls have now also changed their morphology and their behavior patterns, of course. And here we have documented something like that for the Arctic, which is rarely done for the Arctic or subarctic. So that's new in our work. But what I really want to emphasize is this idea of management. So when it comes to management, let's look a little bit into the governance of urban spaces and the humans and the wildlife. And that's something that, when it comes to gulls, is probably not so well done. As a matter of fact, for most of the urban spaces, we have a very one-sided, if not even missing, governance scheme. There's nothing specifically that deals with urban wildlife and urban management on a sustainable level, almost globally, although cities trying. But when it comes to these very details and policy questions and how humans are supposed to adjust and how economic enterprises are having to adjust, that gets very strange very fast. And in my view, that is one of the emphasis in this research, that we need to really look into that closer, because it's not only the disease interactions that we are referring here with the gulls, because gulls are highly affected by avian influenza and other diseases, a disease reservoir, but also on the issue of how humans use space, how do they live well, and how will in the future it will develop and be managed better. Because so far, most wildlife biologists don't work really truly in cities. They prefer to work in protected areas or in wilderness areas, and that's where the emphasis usually sits. You will rarely see an emphasis on urban spaces or on the urban interface or the urban-human interface, which now is a dominating interface in the Anthropocene. And just to show you some references here, I mean, for instance, in North America, as it is probably in Europe and other places too, the idea of bird watchers is very important. And one of the dominating factors really in urban space. It's a big lobby, and these are obviously amateurs who like seeing birds out of the window, often with a bird feeder. So feeding birds plays a big role, and that also attracts other birds and also can spread diseases. So the idea of feeding birds and bird watchers and the amateur in that as a political lobby in the urban governance scheme is very important. Often there are problems, and then these problems are supposed to go away or to be addressed. That's where industrial contractors come in and similar groups who try to manage or at least to assess the situation and provide management recommendations. But that's also not happening, and that's also a problem. And then, of course, the municipalities, which are really on a end level of the governance path, when you think of the federal system where the federal governments, the state governments, and then the municipality comes in. There are some of those issues, and what I'm mentioning here is to highlight those and to look at them, to address them, and to somehow find a solution, because urban sprawl is a big issue, certainly in places like subarctic where diseases play a role for gulls and where the governance is really poorly addressed. In the Anthropocene in general, you see there's an issue with stray cats, just to mention one example, in the urban areas, and with many other animals that I also found co-evolution and co-evolving with humans. So anyway, I think I can leave it there, but I hope it opens your thoughts on these and your policy procedures on these, because we find, I would find there a problem with these species that are benefiting from human activities while other species are not benefiting, or while species that exist are actually totally adjusting to the human enterprise. And I think that's the problem when you think about the future and how many people are coming into Earth, onto Earth, and where the future will go with climate change and other impacts. So anyway, I leave it there. But I just wanted to emphasize and stress this. I hope you find it interesting and exciting. Please feel free to follow up with me. Here's one publication, and I have a lot of references in there where you can read up more on this topic. It's a big scheme, and it will affect how humans live, not only in the subarctic or in Alaska, but also in many other places worldwide where we really have these super cities coming. Okay, thank you so much. Looking forward to hearing you again, and thanks for attending. Bye-bye.